Welcome back to Irish Illustrated Insider. It is Monday, August 24th. I'm Tim O'Malley, joined by Tim Priester and Drew Mentok of Irish Illustrated. Guys, we have a rare in-season, probably 20-minute, maybe 15-minute look at practice tomorrow, where we will also then go see the Shields Family Hall, media tour of Shields Family Hall for the first time. But today is about wrapping up camp, as Notre Dame did on Friday with Marcus Freeman's press conference, which followed a 100-play scrimmage. Ironically, not open to the media, so we can only tell you what we have heard, and that's what we're going to do best here. Tim Priester, you want to start us off with all the terrible news you heard from the... I'm just kidding. All the news you heard from the scrimmage.
I think it's positive news to hear that the offense had a good day on Friday. And we just before we hit record here, we said it. Our confidence is more on the defensive side of the ball. That's not universal among fans, I know, because they don't believe in Chris Ash necessarily yet. But the offense had a better day than the defense. And that's good. I think they needed it. There's been so much talk about wide receivers, and we'll talk about wide receivers again today as it relates to Marcus Freeman's press conference on Friday, et cetera. But a little bit more success for the offense, the offensive line probably winning the day against the defensive line, and for the passing game to have success, I think that's a positive. You're never going to come out of a scrimmage and be happy, completely happy about both sides of the football. It's not possible. A little bit of good news for the offensive side of the football, I think, is a real positive.
Yeah, and they even shared clips, and you could see Faison and Greathouse, some of those guys making plays. So I think it's good to see it's not just Faison, and Greathouse is still looking good and healthy. And I feel like in a lot of the scrimmages or jersey scrimmages we've seen, sometimes the offense wins, but you don't totally come away feeling like that was accurate. Like they just kind of manufactured a score. And yeah, I think it's good going into the season. That's not what this felt like or was supposedly was.
Yeah, we spoke with Freeman right after it. And his body language is in a way where I got a colleague text me during it and a couple people in the front row texted me during it and said, well, somebody obviously got hurt. That was his look. Fortunately, it was not. He was pissed. I guess the defensive line in particular got reamed after practice. Charlie Partridge was pissed. So the offensive line, and then I got another note saying the offensive line had a good day, which is goes with the first right. Note. Defensive line was the one that really got reamed, and that the wide receivers had a good day as well. So that's good to hear. Freeman did say, just because we never say some of these names, Freeman said Saldate made a nice play that day when we were asking about he was listing boundary receivers, then he flipped over to the other side. So that is great to hear. And I think what people got to remember is, like, Tim, you said you're never going to be happy as a coach with the whole scrimmage because someone's going to win or lose.
Absolutely.
But I think he was mad at, like, for defense, he was mad at the effort. Like, why in a scrimmage are you giving this effort? Why would this show up now? And I think when you're a head coach, probably good timing, because you would wonder right now, like, why would you have a bad effort in your 100 practice scrimmage for the weekend coming off? I would think it would be the day before where you know you have a scrimmage coming up. So, yeah. You know what it is? It's competition, and they were losing. You've said that a lot. It's athletic competition. That's the Priester phrase. The athletes on the offense won. That's what happens. It's not like they're scout teamers going against CJ Carr and Jordan Faison, Aeneas Williams, and a frontline offensive line. They should win some. They better win some.
Well, and that's why I felt compelled to write a story yesterday. And Tim, I hope I didn't walk over your story too much I know there were a couple of repeat quotes, but I felt it was really important to point out as we stress about a couple things that we see with the receiving core and then conclude that it's not any good. We cannot forget who is delivering the football to them. CJ Carr is going to make these guys better. Now, if they never get open, well, then it won't matter. But these guys aren't incompetent. They can get open. They just need to have a little bit of success and build some confidence. And you have the perfect quarterback to do that, whether it be in the preseason or once the season starts. So CJ Carr is going to make them better. He's going to throw people open. If it's not like a guy has to be wide open for CJ Carr to accurately throw him the football. And so there were some slivers of openings against the secondary on Friday, and they took advantage of it. So, man, I think we're all tired of preseason camp and the longest off season in the history that I can of Notre Dame football, or so it seems, since it has been so long, the beginning of December. You know, it's good to have some balance with the offense having success. And I'm glad Charlie Partridge is pissed. That's great. They respect him. They'll respond to him.
I agree. 2 weeks before the season is a much better time. It's moving weekend in town too. Like they're probably were thinking about other things potentially. And it's good to see. Yeah. I mean, CJ Carr, you want a guy who, if you're off your game a little bit, like, he's going to take advantage of it, to your point, Priester. So I think that's the type of thing we've seen. He's a competitive dude, and he's not the type to let up in those situations. So if other people aren't there, he's never going to lack that competitive edge.
Plus, the receivers don't lack anything except consistency. And coaches can't stand inconsistent receivers, because that means a lot of people say, like, well, why can't you just get his speed on the field? Well, he runs the wrong route 1 out of 5 times. It's a pick six. How about you don't run the wrong route ever? Because that's your job. You have 2 jobs. Go to school and don't run the wrong route. So, I mean, they're all talented. That's why they look great in one-on-one. We can watch one-on-ones and say, oh, my God, I can't believe Deion Colsey goes up against that ball like that. Well, you ran the wrong route at Virginia Tech. It was brought back for a touchdown. Like, these things happen.
And they want them to be able to pick up the signals from the sidelines and stuff too. They don't just want it coming from CJ Carr. They want to be able to play fast and stuff. So it is like knowing all the playbook and be able to interpret it consistently. Because you're right, if you miss one play and you have to ask about it, or you don't, you're doing, that's a big deal.
There is an overreaction to the clips that Notre Dame puts out. Now, a receiver jumps up and makes a play. That's what receivers do, man.
Yeah.
I mean,
especially receivers, they all can make great catches.
Yeah, I mean, it's like an outfielder making a running catch. It's like an infielder making a play and a ground ball hit right at him. That's what you do. That's what receivers are supposed to do. But to your point, Tim, you know, we're always asked about Cam Williams, but we say inconsistent. Well, if he runs the wrong depth of the route,
right,
he can't be on the field.
Yeah, it's not being a moron. It's you're one yard off, and it throws
right.
it off. You have to have
right. attention to detail. Like I don't necessarily. We've seen him have some drops, and I don't want to make this an addendum on Cam Williams. It's not about him. But you know, I mean, I think he generally catches the football well. But if you have a few drops, you have a few. And this is just in general with receivers. You didn't recognize the coverage. You ran the wrong depth.
Well, let's stop using Cam and say the backup boundaries, Bettis, Burris, and Fitzgerald. Let's say all three of those guys are doing all three of those things. That's why there's three backup boundaries and not one.
Right. No, that's an excellent way of putting it, Tim. It's just when we say consistency, I mean, there are many aspects to each position's game, and wide receiver is – throw in the fact that they are constantly on the run. You know, it's a difficult position to play and difficult to master.
Well, quickly too, I just think it's important with a guy like CJ Carr too, that you be on top of it, because he is going to be so advanced with his film study, what he's looking for. So if he sees something and you're not prepared to do it, that's not going to stop him. So you can't have somebody off your game with a quarterback like that in particular, I feel.
That's a great point. He's going to trust what he sees, and you better see it, and he's going to throw what you're supposed to see, and if you don't do it, it looks like CJ Carr threw a pick. But in reality, it was one of those damn freshmen. They'll get you fired, Tim Priester. That's what they used to say, right? Freshmen get you fired. Well, now they win titles for you or get you the championship games. Anything else from Freeman's press conference before we get to the weirdest, I guess, the story that sums up off-field college football in 2026.
Oh, yeah.
Anything else from the Marcus Freeman press?
I got a couple things, Drew. Go ahead, jump in.
Just quickly, as much as it sounds like the defensive line didn't play well, like, he did list the defensive tackles as one of the deepest parts of the team. Also with the linebackers, but to put the defensive tackles, I think looking back the start of the transfer portal to now, where we look at that unit, to put it even anywhere close to that group is a pretty big jump. And I mean, even you go back 2 years ago, Riley Mills got hurt for the playoff run. Howard Cross wasn't at his elite level most of that season. Like, you really haven't had this level of defensive tackles, I feel, since he took over. So I think that could be a really big sign, and shows a lot of what Coach Partridge has done since he got to Notre Dame, too.
I believe I saw Howard Cross, the third pass broken up in the Colts game. I think it was against Riley. It might have been against Riley Leonard. Who struggled a little bit. A couple things. I love this quote from Freeman talking about Leonard Moore. Great players don't want to be left alone. In other words, they don't just, they still want to be coached. Especially great players want to be coached. And I think that's an insight that we don't normally, anticipate or talk about. Micah Gilbert, look, this is the quote from Freeman. I hope it's accurate. I don't have any reason to believe it's not accurate. But if it is, it's a significant quote. Micah Gilbert has stepped up tremendously. Micah is who we thought Micah was going to be, who we expected Micah to be. He's been having a really good camp, has made some big catches, and has really done a good job. I hope that's accurate. If that's accurate and he can be consistent, maintain that consistency, all right, now you got something going. Because I don't think anybody – Jordan Faison will always be underrated, but he shouldn't be because he's an excellent receiver. A healthy Jaden Greathouse can be productive. You still have Mylon Graham, who's been slowed on a couple occasions for whatever reasons, but we know he's a great athlete. And then you throw Gilbert in there, and hopefully Freeman's comments are accurate. That's four. You need a couple more. But if those front four are playing good football with C.J. Carr, things are going to click.
Also from that press conference, Junior Tuihalamaka will not be returning to Notre Dame. We'll briefly touch on that. But former Virginia Tech and former Ole Miss tight end Daquan Wright, who went pro the Cleveland Browns minicamp, about to be cut, was catching passes on the field for a preseason game while he entered the transfer portal in college football so he can return to not any of the schools he went to play this year. Now, of course, it's for Lane Kiffin and LSU, and that's the Ole Miss connection. But guys, the weirdest thing is a guy running flat routes and he's in the transfer portal in college while he's with the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he was clearly professional, this was almost used as a backup plan, I think, for him. And then now that's how it's going to be used. It's not, I mean, it's weird. It's not a great situation. I think it speaks to maybe this will give the Protect College Sports Act some extra oomph if they, once they revisit it in September. But it's definitely a chaotic scenario. I mean, looking back on it, maybe the NCAA should have, rather than hoping people wouldn't do this, should have thought about making this 5-for-5 rule back in January or even after the draft or something, where you could have had a little bit more flexibility, because people were going to want to do this, even if it's not what's best for the sport long term. All those things, like, people are still, I mean, he can probably go back to LSU and make, you know, I'm sure he's making at least six figures. That's more than he's going to make in a practice squad that he might get cut from anyway. So, I mean, practice squad players make a decent amount of money, but the point is, like, he can make a good amount of money there, so he's going to take it, and you can't really blame him for that. So it's just kind of a bungled situation, and we'll see how it shakes out. But it is a weird scenario.
Greaser, don't you miss the days where that used to be a fun joke to say? Oh, he'll make more at LSU than he will in the practice. That used to be a fun thing to say, but now it's
an idea.
He absolutely will.
Is that a basketball joke from Jack?
Do you think this thing with Daquan Wright, will it really come to fruition?
I mean, I have no idea what they will do nowadays.
I don't either.
I know what you're saying, but like, at least we're trying to put some common sense into a situation that has none. But you're right. Common sense would tell you something will block it.
It is interesting that this was a Louisiana judge specifically in this case, I believe, that ruled on it, and then they're staying at LSU. So I wonder if that gives it a little more cover. I don't know if this is probably something Bryce would have a lot more information.
I was going to say,
but it is we're so close to the season, like, we'll find out soon enough, I guess. Well,
the irony of it is he could be joining Junior Tuihalamaka, who will be going to LSU to play defensive ends. Notre Dame graduate, congratulations to him, was not in a camp. And I don't know many people, if you didn't listen to Instant Analysis or our last podcast, he also was unable to really have a pro, or after pro day, he got hurt. So he was unable to go to any mini camps. So I know it's double standard, but I'm happy for Junior Tuihalamaka gets to play a little bit more football and maybe get a chance to play in the NFL. All right. Before we wrap up segment one and get to questions, we actually have a question I've been saving because this is better for the end of camp. From Elkman 1996, your confidence level in each category, and he has six of them, against the best teams ND could possibly play. So this obviously is Miami. You can throw in SMU and BYU and the playoffs. Just use high, medium, or low confidence. I'll run you guys through them. Passing game. Drew Mentok.
High.
You too, Tim?
I'm medium to high.
It's like on a burner.
Typical, yeah.
I'm going to turn this to medium high heat.
Typical. I can't pick just one answer. You know better than that.
Tim Priest, we have a new thing where Tim Priester is like the burner on the stove. He has medium high heat going on here. Again.
Name one player. Okay, here are my six.
Yeah. Running game. Go ahead, Drew.
Yeah, I'll probably go low, medium to low. We'll see. I mean, it helps that they play Miami and some of those good teams later. If it were first game, I would probably be low, but they could be medium by the game.
Yeah, I'd say medium. I like the personnel that they have up front, but there's a lot of shifting going on, so I'll say medium. My confidence is like yours, Tim, as far as Aeneas Williams, it's high, but he's depending upon a lot of other people.
There's a lot of it. Yep. I will go high, and on Priester's burner scale, lowish to medium. It's like it's higher than Simmer for running game when you're playing against if you're getting IU and Oregon, then you're at low. If you're getting Alabama, you're at, and BYU, you're at medium. Because there's a lot of variances on how good teams can be. Pass defense.
High.
I'm high on that. I'm
high on that as well. Rush defense.
High.
I'm high on that as well.
I am.
Here's a fun one. Short yardage, which is also kind of like red zone offense. So why don't we call it red zone offense? Because you got to convert usually, but you can also throw to convert in the world we live in.
Medium.
I would tend to say medium, and I know we keep going back to Cooper Flanagan, and he's just one guy. He's not the offensive, he's not an offensive tackle. He's a tight end, but I think we all believe that Cooper Flanagan and James Flanagan, really, for that matter, and we have a question regarding this in the second segment. You know, I think those two guys are excellent blockers and will raise the level of productivity in the short yardage game.
Yep. I would say medium short yardage and high red zone because of CJ Carr. I think he'll do a great job there. A short yardage red zone defense.
I'm pretty high on everything the defense is doing.
Yeah, I was going to say it's.
Yeah. Important. And I think they've looked extra good in the.
Except Friday.
Practice view. Yeah, we didn't see that one, but in the other ones, I feel like that's an area they've definitely excelled. So I feel like Miami does have a pretty good short yardage running back, but otherwise, I feel pretty good about that.
I do too. I mean, short yardage is not easy, but if you have Teon Gray and Sean Sevilano and Jason Onye as part of your five-man front and third and goal at the one-yard line, I like what everybody else is doing there, too. It's hard to – I'm not nitpicking at anything on the defense, and I just want to stress to people because we were talking about the scrimmage. Defense isn't always going to win, man. There's just no – they're also not impenetrable. They're going to have a game where they give up 21 points to someone that they shouldn't give up 21 points to, and you're like, why'd they give up 21 points to that team? And it won't all be garbage. It's just – you can't be on a 12-game straight revenge tour. They've been on a 10-game revenge tour. I mean, as Priester, as you wrote all the great quarters, they still looked like crap against USC for a quarter and a half. Right. They're going to run into somebody where they are like that.
It's, yeah, and, you know, I mean, Chris Ash has a whole bunch of defense in his arsenal. So is he, you know, was he trying a little bit more on Friday to do this and that? I can't answer that specifically, but I wouldn't be shocked at that, but I think your point is the most salient of all of them, Tim, is that nobody, no offense, no defense is going to be perfect and really good all the time. It's just, it's not feasible. And that's why upsets happen. That's why near upsets happen.
Notre Dame's offensive line does have a preseason All-American and in 2 5-star offensive tackles too. So it's not like it's a bunch of nobodies out there.
Yeah, that's true. They can play a little bit, I would assume, too. But we'll be back with Burning Up the Boards, segment 2, and we'll be near perfect, because no one can be perfect. We all know that. We're back with segment 2. We call it Burning Up the Boards. Our first question from GWE5. And there are a few questions about this, actually. It's well-timed. What are the reports coming out of Wisconsin's camp that you've all heard? Any areas outside of their front seven that might concern Notre Dame?
First of all, I would say I think it's more their back seven on defense. I think they have some question marks up front. Look, this is a team with a ton of transfers. And I, you know, trying to follow this last couple of weeks, you begin to suspect that the turnover is a little bit of a problem as far as them finding cohesion and chemistry. But, you know, I've said Colton Joseph's name probably more than anybody in the country that doesn't cover Wisconsin, you know, since early on in the process. He's a dynamic athlete, but he throws a lot of picks, and it sounds like, you know, accuracy has continued to be an issue for him in the preseason. I'm a little bit higher on their wide receiver core maybe than most, but again, it's transfers. Domingo from Southeast Louisiana, as they're counting a lot on him, and Rigby from Oklahoma State. But I just, you know, they haven't meshed a ton. And then defensively, you know, like I said, I think there's still some question marks along the defensive line. I love their line. Everybody loves their linebackers Posa and Catalano, and their safety play is good too. But man, when we if we sit around complaining about Notre Dame's issues with their wide receivers and their fourth and fifth defensive ends, try being Wisconsin, because you're trying to fit pieces together, 30 plus transfers. And I think they're having some difficulty getting the cohesion that they need with all the new bodies.
Yeah, I mean, I read some of the reports too, and I think a lot of times with that stuff, it can be positive. I think the one thing that I feel like I'm recognizing more and more, which I think is part of the reason with the transfers, but you look at some reports, they spent $4 million, $9 million on their football roster last year. It was probably a lot more than that, but still, they've potentially jumped up significantly. I wrote the story. It was based on a CBS Sports survey on how much teams spent on their roster, and Wisconsin's probably the second most expensive roster Notre Dame will face this year after Miami. So there is at least an influx of talent. I mean, even bringing Colton Joseph over from Old Dominion, like he's a guy with experience, like they've invested, and that's probably why Luke Fickell got, you know, was kept around, because they realized they were so far behind the times. So I think they do have some expectations that this could be a jump. It's probably a good team, to your point, Priester, to face in week one, though.
Couple of quick points. They are missing two guys on the right side of the offensive line. Kevin Haywood suffered a lower body injury during the second practice of fall camp, and he missed teamwork through the end of camp. So he's questionable for the opener. Emerson Mandel sidelined the entirety of fall camp because he had surgery on his foot in the spring. I went to Badger 24/7, read Nick Osen's scrimmage report. This was their big scrimmage as well. He said the story of the day had to be about the defense. Made it very tough for the offense to score points. Especially when the top defense was in there, there was no touchdowns allowed the first five drives. And he said the defense they expect to see start the fall did not allow any touchdowns on the day. He did mention he thought quarterbacks protected the ball well, though. Better reads, better timing, zero turnovers by the quarterback position, which is hard to do in a scrimmage because you're playing. They have a backup battle going on, too. So for two backup QBs to have zero turnovers, that's a differentiate. And then he mentioned there's no number one receiver. But he thinks Fickell and Jeff Grimes and receiver coach Ari Confessor have really pulled them together. He said they trust about 11 players, including tight ends, in the passing game. But you know what I say there? When you have 11 players you trust at wide receiver and tight end, you don't have three players you want to start at wide receiver and tight end. So I kind of wrote about that a little bit in my Sunday story. You know, we wouldn't be talking about all these backup receivers Notre Dame has to have played positions 5, 6, and 7 if they had Claypool, Golden Tate, and Will Fuller. Who's the backups? I don't know.
Doesn't matter.
Right, move on. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, I think I've said this a few times, bet the under in the opener.
Yeah. I'll keep that in mind, Tip. You know, Haywood, their right tackle, he missed last year too, in addition to, you know, the second practice you said. So I think I wrote this a week or two ago that, you know, he's their Charles Jagasaw in terms of injuries. I certainly, you know, probably not five surgeries, but he hasn't been able to stay healthy. And so, you know, their tackle situation is really, really sketchy. But, you know, man, when you have that many transfers, you think, oh, wow, you can just plug these guys in. And I don't know how many were there in the spring, quite frankly. I mean, we know, like, I don't know that I've ever seen a report on other schools who came in the spring.
I would assume they all were, because you don't have to worry about credits getting in there.
Yeah, probably true. You know, yeah. Probably true. But, yeah, still, I want to say this. This is talent-wise, this is still the fourth – This is still the fourth best team on Notre Dame's schedule.
Next question, and it's a two-parter, but I'm going to wait on the second part to see if we agree. Franklin ND1 would like more detail on the tight end situation. How is James Flanagan doing? Is Ian Premmer what we hope he will be yet? Basically, what are the roles for other tight ends minus Cooper Flanagan? We can get to Cooper Flanagan later in this podcast.
Drew?
I mean, I think with Ian Premmer, everyone hopes him to be like the next Michael Mayer, but maybe a little faster. I don't think he's at that level yet. We even see Jack Larson in even some of the practice clips they put out too, making plays with the first team. So I think they're still rotating in quite a few guys. But it was encouraging to hear what we've heard from even press conferences about James Flanagan. I mean, he's a guy I think I had him ranked first or second coming out of high school in that class. Like, he was a really underdeveloped receiver coming out, just because I think he was a more important defensive player in high school and they ran the ball a lot. But I think he's a guy with a lot of talent. And if he can start putting that together, we know he has that physicality and size. And I mean, really does mirror a lot of what Cooper Flanagan does. I just don't know if he has that edge quite yet.
I had questions about James Flanagan as the receiver coming out of high school, and they didn't throw to him a lot. I know that had a lot to do with it, but I just didn't feel like he had the movement of a high volume catching tight end, but he's an excellent blocker. He got playing time last year because of that. And so, you know, the two Flanagans, Cooper and James, I mean, that's a really nice 1-2 punch blocking wise. Anyway, even if those two guys are catching passes downfield, I don't think Notre Dame is probably showing those highlight clips because they would rather not have those shown. Ty Washington's a guy that's caught the football a lot. We know that, but they also utilize him as a blocker. And then, you know, the two freshmen are probably more receiving type. And I've never given Jack Larson a whole bunch of credit because he's a little bit undersized. And I know that Marcus Freeman wasn't always happy with his blocking performance, but he can catch the damn football. And I think he's shown that again in the preseason. So there's a combination block. Who's being brought in for blocking? Who's being brought in for catching the football?
I think you'll see more Ian Premmer in late September than early September. The way Freeman listed the names, and he doubled up on James Flanagan. I mean, I always say that what about the red zone package for Eli Raridan when he was a backup as a sophomore we never saw? So I assume there won't be one for Ian Premmer either. But Premmer one day will become a detached weapon for this team. I just think it's going to be at Wisconsin. This is related, not JTFL 1. We seem to hear how deep this team is. Besides quarterback, could you tell us the position group with the least amount of depth? Remember, having a bunch of players doesn't mean depth. Great line by not JTFL. And I think we might have just talked about it. Do you guys agree?
I would actually go a different route.
Okay.
Just for today, maybe not in a month or two or whatever, but I would say offensive line. Just because, I mean, we'll see what happens with Ashton Craig. But I also don't get the sense that there was a ton of confidence about Sullivan Absher. I know he's healthier. He's a lot of size. But especially now, like if a tackle went down, does that mean you're moving Anthony Knapp back out to tackle after you've been working on a guard fall year? Like, I kind of feel like that's the position they're in. You know, it helps that you have some depth at center, but also we've seen Ashton Craig get hurt. But until like Maddie Augustine comes back, we'll see what happens with Charles Jagasaw too. But I think in terms of like, if Wisconsin, one guy goes down, you're making real significant changes where there might be a, you know, very apparent issue with a position group, I think I would go there.
Yeah, the injury to Maddie Augustine, we've talked about it many times. I mean, he's probably back up at four positions, so that was significant. You know, I wrote down tight end
he's convinced me, though. Drew's convinced me. They're on backup. They're on offensive lineman number eight if someone gets hurt already.
That's true. But Jagasaw, you know, Jagasaw will probably come back at some point. Will it be after the bye week, which is well into the season?
Might be after the holiday season, I would say. He's got a couple months of rehab left.
At the earliest, I would think would be the third.
He
week
will not be November. Before the bye week.
Will
not play before the bye week. Yeah.
And with Jagasaw too, he's a guy who has had two upper body injuries for the last 2 years. Like he, there's going to be some strength training and stuff required that I'm sure he's already starting to do. But like, he's just not been able to do the stuff you'd expect from a power four offensive lineman for a while in terms of just keeping his body right.
Hey guys, let's ask Mike Dembrock about the next man in, because it won't do you good to ask Marcus this in the opening presser. Let's ask Mike Dembrock about guys like Chris Terrick and guys that might who will play if guys have to play. And if you hem and you haw and you talk about Stiles Prescott like you used to talk about Tosh Baker, we'll know that there's concern. If you say Stiles Prescott and Chris Terrick have been great then as backups, then less concern.
Okay, so let's just go through the offensive linemen here real quick. Guys we know who the projected
players won't play because they're
right. But yeah. Chris Terrick would be one that you would mention. Cam Heron would be one that you would mention possibly as being.
But that would be nowhere near Notre Dame's level of starting offensive line.
No doubt, because he's the third center. You know, I don't even know where to begin with freshmen. I mean, Absher's going to have to play well.
Yes.
He has to play well out of the gate.
I think that means Drew, good job. That is the least deep.
Yeah. No, you're right. But I also wonder about tight end as far as like actual pass catching tight ends beyond the freshmen.
Right.
Our next question is from the Irish Car Bomb. Give me your third and long pass rush package on defense. 4 to 5 guys up front and the secondary.
Up front, we're going to pretend, we're just going to say Kingston Viliamuasa is in the package on week. Let's say it's week 2, just for the fun of it, instead of week 1. All right, so don't use Kingston. He is in the package at some point, Kingston Viliamuasa.
Yes.
So I'm going to keep him out of this one for Wisconsin. I'm going to say Bryce Young kicks inside next to Francis Brew, Boubacar Traore, Keon Keeley, and Jalen Snead are in some manner getting after the quarterback on 3rd and 10.
I mean, I got to believe Dunham's a choice ahead of Keeley in terms of pure pass rusher. I mean, now there's a little bit, I mean, I think a little bit of concern of, you're talking about backups at defensive end, but backups that can stop the run. Can you put Logan Thomas in a run defense situation at 221?
Maybe not, but this is the pass rush situation.
I'm going to bring him up at another time, but yeah, I mean, KVA's a healthy KVA is an option.
Yeah.
Snead is an option. You got to have Traore on the field. I agree that you bump Bryce Young inside, and Brew would be the guy that I think that you would choose there. Maybe Onye, maybe.
Ooh, I like Brew there. Yeah.
I think Brew is there. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah. I put him there first as well.
And the same. And actually, instead of Keeley or Dunham, I think I might go Logan Thomas just from the, if we're talking that specific, it's 3rd and long, they're not going to run. Just what he did to even going back to the blue goal game against Matty Augustine. Like I think he had, you know, 5 or 6 pass rush reps and won 4 of them and had 1 or 2 sacks. Like he is a guy who in that specific role, I think could do well and bring something a little different. And I agree getting KVA out there when you can, because he's also so good in pass coverage. And then if he's on the field with, for instance, Bowen, who's gotten a lot better too, Bowen still had 3.5 sacks last year. You can kind of mix and match those guys a little bit. And then, I mean, I think with
Bowen
the second,
Bowen doesn't come off. He like captains down defense. So that's a good point, Drew. Bowen, he doesn't sub out. I don't know why. I think you can sub out Jaden Osbury for Bowen in 3rd down.
Right.
But. Could have done that against A&M.
Oh, yeah, so I was maybe thinking of
right. And I think with the secondary, I mean, you go with the 5 starters and the nickel defense. I mean, maybe you could go dime if we really wanted to. But I think when you have a guy like KVA, especially who is so good at coverage, what we've seen from Bowen, like you don't actually have to do that. Like it's
– yeah.
Notre Dame actually has the linebackers to even play with 3 more often if they wanted to.
I agree. I don't think Notre Dame has to go to dime very often.
No. Yeah, but they have good defensive backs too, so you can do whatever you want. It's almost as if that scrimmage that they just played won't define the entire season for Notre Dame's defense, so they might be pretty good.
Question number 4 from the Rick ND. Each of Marcus Freeman's teams have lost a game in September. Multiple of those games were of the no business losing variety. Could you split the panel and offer the most compelling reason why this trend will not continue and why it could happen? So we've got 3.
I will take, Drew is going to take why they could lose. I will take the cheer cheer for old Notre Dame side and tell you why they cannot possibly lose in September. No, I don't really ever believe those things. However, there's a common denominator in the Marshall and Northern Illinois losses. Quarterback play was terrible. The Marshall quarterback play, and Tim Priester called this ahead of time. He didn't call the quarterback play. You called the Marshall secondary play. It was terrible in that game. Notre Dame, their secondary was better than Notre Dame's passing game and quarterback. That's awful here, but it was true.
They had a good D-line, too.
Riley Leonard missed Chris Mitchell for what would have been Chris Mitchell's most famous Notre Dame moment to win a game over Northern Illinois, and it would now be the famous Chris Mitchell moment. And he was open by 15 yards, and he missed him by 16 yards. So CJ Carr is not doing either one of those things. And CJ Carr was involved in the Miami and A&M losses, of course, but that was first year, first 2 games CJ Carr. Quarterback play is the reason, not because some magic formula that they figured out something in between the game. Because before you say these teams stink, those teams stunk too. But Notre Dame has too good of a quarterback to do it this year.
I think my biggest thing is I had Isaiah Dunn on the Irish Illustrated Interviews podcast recently, and he was, for those who don't know, a walk-on cornerback up until this past season. Now he's with WNDU, but he talked about even in 2024, like how they almost needed that Northern Illinois loss, and I don't think he quite meant to say it that way, but it is kind of, we still haven't seen it from Marcus Freeman where they play at that elite level. and don't slip up without their backs against the wall. So I think we've still seen, until that moment happens, we saw it last year too, we don't know that they can't slip up. We've seen him lose as a 20-plus point favorite multiple times. That's going to be all of September. But if a team, especially like Wisconsin, Pat Fitzgerald-led Michigan State, can match Notre Dame's physicality or even get ahead of them, and the leave no doubt phrase is great, it might work, but there's still a team that is getting first votes to be the number one team preseason. There's a lot of hype about this team. Maybe some of that seeps in and they just don't come fully prepared. I'm not saying I think this will happen, but my perspective from why it could, we still haven't seen them just come out the gate, be the favorite, play as the favorite, and not have something slip up where then once it's desperation, we've seen Marcus Freeman can really turn it on, but can they just play out front and just be that dominant team from the get-go?
Tim, I think excellent point by you, Tim, about the quarterback play. CJ Carr can overthrow a receiver. We've seen him do that. But over the course of four quarters,
that's what I mean.
Over the course of four quarters, exactly, he's going to be too good for that to happen. This team is now self-monitored, so to speak, especially after what happened last year in December. Those days are over. I mean, I think the days of losing to Marshall in Northern Illinois in September, I think they're over, as long as Marcus Freeman's there and the program is
intact. Say as long as Marcus Freeman's there. I would say as long as this team's there, this exact team. they could lose to someone next year without CJ Carr and without these guys. I don't think there's like this magic potion. Otherwise, he would have done it in the past.
Well, it's over. It's over in 2026. It's not going to happen in 2026, totally agree, especially game two, because Rice is simply not good enough. Now, Drew, to your point, I think Michigan State, again, I always come back to the defensive players that I see on the other teams. Michigan State's got some guys on that side of the ball. So can they disrupt Notre Dame's offense for a series or two in the first quarter, second quarter? Yeah, I think they're capable of doing that. But look, their collective heads weren't right for Northern Illinois. And even Isaiah Dunn knew it, and he wasn't even involved in the game plan. So
I just think this year isn't, I would not guess it would happen this year, but their collective heads weren't right after Florida State when they played Toledo. Okay, that was Brian Kelly and Marcus Freeman. Their collective heads weren't right for Ball State when they went undefeated, and that was Clark Lee and Brian Kelly. You're not always going to be there. I just think this team's too good for their collective heads to matter. I think you could have a bad week of practice and this team will go kill someone.
Certainly in 2026. Now, we got a long time to talk about.
There's going to be a collective
2027, match, right? 2027, and which guys on this roster are still going to be here. There's a lot of them that could be gone. There's a lot of them that could stay too, or half of them could stay. That a lot of that will depend upon just how prepared they are to handle September of next year. What's that?
You said might stay or might go. A lot of that will depend on, I was going to say, how much money they offer them to stay.
True.
Next question. Irish 0311. If Blake Hubert is number two versus Wisconsin, is it because he can run, or will it be because the young guns just need more seasoning? He said run between the tackles. I'm just turning that into run.
I'm not sure that it's either one of those specifically. I think it's more, Hebert getting them aligned, Hebert being in a better prepared to make checks at the line of scrimmage. That's just an assumption based upon the fact that he's been around a little bit longer than the other two. That's not a definite thing per se, but I think it would be more that. And is he a better runner probably than the other two?
Yes, he is.
He is.
Gaduli said he's the one guy.
I think it's more about getting things settled and situated and being able to take the communication with Mike Denbrock and put it into action, setting protections, more of those things than actual running ability.
Yeah, I agree. Just how in tune they are with the offense and just some of the little things they want to do. Obviously the game plan and what they're going to do will change dramatically if any of these three need to go into the game. So if the specific things they would want somebody to do are different, but I think it would just have to be they're not there. I mean, I think that's going to be a lot of short throws and getting the ball to like a Jordan Faison in space in those instances. And I haven't seen Blake Hebert excel in those areas yet. So part of me would think if it's him, it's because the other two just aren't ready to do what you said Tim Priester, which is kind of command the offense and make sure everything's running smoothly like that.
I like the question because it is a do no harm situation. You were just using Heber as an example. Teddy Gerrard might be the one that gets him lined up just as well. Noah Gross.
Yeah, no, that's why I say that we don't know that
for certain. I could see Blake Heber being the answer for, this isn't how you can prepare your number two quarterback, but like if you desperately needed some yards because CJ Carr got hurt, I bet you Blake Heber could run the read option and take off running for 15 yards that other guys can't do. But that's not how you choose your actual backup quarterback because he can gain you 15 yards on a surprise run. But
no, and Freeman hinted at this on August 4th, right? That the backup at the start of the season may not be the backup midseason or end of the season or however he said it. I think he might have been hinting at that, but you're right. We don't know. Maybe Noah Grubbs is best at getting them aligned and, recognizing that he's got to change the protection, et cetera. I know you get some help from the offensive line in doing that, but we naturally assume Hebert should be better at it. He's been around it a little bit longer.
Next question is from Callahan Auto Parts. How deep is the ideal defensive end depth chart? I know defensive tackle, you want a lot of bodies. Six seems ideal there. But a defensive end, it seems like 3 to 4 is the ideal depth. Less subs, more three down players.
I'm trying to think of the deepest they've gone. It's like 2023, Tui Alamaka was what? God, when did he come to the team? He was a sophomore. He has converted. He was about the fifth defensive end. I think defensive tackle is all about if you have six deep, you rotate them, they stay fresh, you rock. There's so much situational substitutions now that KVA would play over defensive ends that could come in as an end. Sneed can too. Right. But in terms of depth, depth means for the season. You better have five for the season. You don't have to have five for a game, though. I think he probably means a game, right? The question. You could lose three defensive ends in 10 weeks. So definitely more than that.
I think so. Yeah. Not looking at injuries specifically.
Right. You don't need to have more than five that you trust because with KVA and Sneed coming in.
Well, KVA and Sneed are, they're really significant in this equation. There's no doubt. You would like to have Tua Alamaka. You would like to have that knowledge and that strength, the base that he gives you. I understand the question. It probably less defensive ends than defensive tackles. But in this instance, Viliamuasa and Sneed are very key, and they're good. They're good at KVA is really good at it.
Yes.
Provided that he's, as healthy as you need him to be really good at it. We have a question from Billingsley. You have overrated one of these guys going into 2026. So who is it? He lists 1, 2, 3, 4, I think 6 or 7 guys. CJ Carr, Bubakar Traore, Briante Johnson, Kingston Viliamuasa, Leonard Moore, Jordan Faison, or Anthony Knapp.
So they basically listed 7 of the 8 best players on the team.
Okay.
7 of the 9 best players on the team. That's why it's a good question. Otherwise you pick somebody.
It is a good question. It's difficult.
It is. Wow. Do you know one group?
If I'm going to pick from this group, I'm going to go with Bubakar Traore. He had a good season last year, but still only 6.5 sacks. Like he's never, I think for the level of what we kind of project him as a, guy with first round pick potential, we haven't seen anywhere near that level yet. So to put him up with those guys, KVA would be bulletproof if he weren't coming off of an ACL injury. Leonard Moore, honestly, Briante Johnson, just even watching him tackle all the different things he can do, like those guys, I just don't see them missing barring injury. Whereas with him, maybe he only improves a little bit and it's 8 sacks or something like that. That doesn't seem ridiculous where we're kind of putting him in, he's a double digit guy and they're going to be talking about as a second round pick at worst. Like maybe not.
I think Traore can be go ahead, Tim.
I have 5 first or second round picks, the first 5 guys listed there, which means I might be overrating Bubakar Traore. That's why I agree with Drew. I'm not saying we're overrating him. From these 7 guys, Faison and Knapp are going to be good college football players this year. You don't have to, but I'm not the guy. I'm not saying Jordan Faison and Anthony Knapp are going to be the level of pro football players these guys are. So I think if you're just looking at expectations, I can't imagine Knapp not having a good year. I can't even think about that. I assume all these guys will, but Traore is the one who has not consistently produced yet. Is that fair?
Yes.
I circled one name, and it was Traore.
Yeah, okay.
And it's not because – I mean, he could have a tremendous –
He could be the defensive MVP of the team.
He could have 10, 11, 12 sacks. But – and that's why it was such a great list by Billingsley.
Yeah.
The other guys – there may be people doubting Jordan Faison. I'm not one of them. Leonard Moore, no. KVA, no. Knapp is the leader of that offensive line. I think CJ Carr will be ready for the NFL after this year. And Briante Johnson's instincts are just off the chart. But Traore hasn't, you know, the expectations. And, you know, maybe if he had played a full season in 2024, he would have reached those expectations last year. Yeah. But
he'd be gone.
Missed nine and a half games. Well, that's true. nine and a half games. So his development was stunted a little bit, but that's the only name that I can really circle on this list right this moment.
He even talked about too, how he just didn't play most of the last season, trusting his knee. Yeah. Like he wasn't, I think with KVA, there's even a little more comments because he's done it before in high school. I don't think Boubacar Traore had an injury like that. So I think mentally he wasn't where he needed to be. So I do expect a jump from him, but yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of these other guys play at that elite All-American caliber level more than I've seen from him yet.
I love this question because I also want to point out before anybody gets mad that we say Traore, that these were our individual listings for Traore in the countdown. Tim Priester, fourth. Drew Mentok, fourth. Tim O'Malley, third. So we like Boubacar Traore, but that's saying we could have overvalued him as opposed to other people. Drew, that injury point is so good, especially on the message board. I hate to quibble with people on the message board about injuries like, well, of course, Craig will be back by this date, and Jagus will be back by this date. If you haven't been injured before, Jagus and Craig have, so I use the bad examples here. If you haven't been injured before, this is what Mathias Farley, one end of the spectrum, and Max Redfield, the other end of the spectrum, said to me. I had never been injured before. I did not know how to play with that injury. Remember Mathias Farley had the broken wrist, and he just didn't even try to tackle Ray Graham? And Zeke Mata, who has been injured before, said, it's already broken, Mathias. Just go tackle him, which is awesome. And Max Redfield, you know, they told him, you're having a minor wrist procedure. He's like, I've never had a procedure of any point in time in my life. I don't want a minor wrist procedure. What do you mean I'm having a minor procedure and have to go play football? So it's a different world if you've never been injured before and you don't know how to bounce back from it. Got a good old Zeke Mata, Tim Priester. He became one of our favorite interviews at the end.
He was great.
Imagine being told by young Mathias Farley, cerebral, brilliant kid. Mathias, it's already broken. Just can't break it again. You're fine.
Well, I don't think that aspect of the game is taken into consideration often enough. There are guys that are playing hurt all the time.
Yeah.
And that's an extremely difficult thing to do, to focus on what needs to be done. I mean, think about the intricacies of the game now, and you have to focus on your responsibility while still being really very physical and disregarding the fact that, damn, that hurts.
Yeah.
I'm astonished many times at the level that these guys can play at under those circumstances.
And if it's your shoulder or your knee, you think about it the whole time. That'd be rough. All right, I was saving this question for a Mentok Priester Samson podcast, but I'm going to pull it out right now anyway, because otherwise we're getting into the season. From Maltese Irish, of all the 2027 defensive lineman commits, which do you think has the best potential as a can't-miss prospect?
Go ahead, Drew.
I think if we're looking at can't-miss, yeah, specifically, I'm going to go with Braden Parks, actually. I just think he's going to be at a pretty high level, and there's going to be a lot of things he can offer as a nose tackle and who can develop potentially into a pass rusher and a guy who kind of wrecks havoc in the backfield. So I'm not saying his ceiling is 100% the highest or anything like that. There's obviously a lot of really good guys in this class, but in terms of just like, I feel like this guy is going to be on the field in 2 years and have a role in the defense, I'm going to pick him.
For the record, and I've done film reviews on all six guys. We did a Zoom with the Notre Dame Club of Los Angeles last night. Six guys on the defensive line who you come away watching their film and you really, really like every one of them. Aiden O'Neill was the first one to commit, and I thought, man, this guy's good. And he is.
About him at this point.
He is a hell of a prospect. And then the other five guys came along. And it's hard not to like them. I will, Drew, I think you make a great point. I think Braden Parks is a really, really unique football player who's, if you look at him, you say nose tackle. And then he plays strong like a nose tackle, but agile like a three technique. And if they want to put him off the edge in high school, he can come off the edge. But I would pick Fuloruncho. I'm going to pick one defensive tackle, one defensive end. Fuloruncho would be my choice at defensive tackle, but I really can't. Yeah, here I go again. I really can't argue.
Maybe an edge linebacker too. You can throw up.
I really can't argue with your thinking there, Drew. But my selection overall defensive end is Cisse. There's a real, real special athlete in that long body, and I think it's Abraham Cisse.
Who do we leave out? So I can just put them on there for you. No, yeah. I was going to say Fuloruncho too, but that's good. I'm glad we got. Hey, this is the time to add a bunch of guys. They're all prospects right now, still. Right?
Well, the two guys that are they're skipping a grade. I mean, those guys are really good football players too. Notre Dame's got six hell of a really, really good candidates on the D line.
If it weren't for the reclassification, I might have gone Jackson Vaughn just because his effort is so incredible that I also think that's going to translate really well to the next level. Even if he's maybe slightly undersized, he's still long, but like just the effort I saw from him, even as a freshman at Irish Invasion, was like, that stands out. Like, this kid doesn't quit. And usually that works out well when you get to the next level.
And when right. I saw Alexander,
that's my new one. Drew's convinced me that's my new one.
That's your new one. When I saw Alexander's film, I thought he could come in and compete at Notre Dame now. It's a great group. I don't want to have to pick first, second, third anymore. Somebody's they're not all going to hit.
Exactly. There we go.
They are not all
going to hear. Yes.
They are not all going to hit. I just don't have any idea who isn't going to hit at this point.
And the good news is that Notre Dame doesn't have to pick between any of them because they just get all of them.
They get all of them. That's right. In our next podcast, we will break down all the long snappers that have ever played for Notre Dame. We'll go from there. Our final question, Jim Booney, CRS. Who are fans and media underestimating as we go into the season? He gave two examples I thought were very good. I'm going to omit them until you guys talk.
Go ahead, Drew.
A little bit of tough time this. Obviously, I hype up Jordan Faison a lot on this podcast. So I guess just from my perspective, I think everyone could view him pretty highly. Another one, again, he's a player. We was third in our countdown. But I just think Bronte Johnson has a real chance to be. We're going to look at him like a Kyle Hamilton, Xavier Watts after this season. Like, I just think he's so instinctive, makes plays over the field. I feel like I'm really starting to bring up just like he tackles perfectly. Like, even in the drills, like
you're
he just
to say it. It's good.
Yeah. It's just really. And I talked to Isaiah Dunn about this too. Like, he just has such perfect form tackling and gets low and wraps up and does all the things. And he's explosive that I just think that he might be on another level than what we're a lot of people are expecting out of him. And Don Shuler gets a lot of love because he's the captain and coming back. But I think he could be like kind of a transcendent talent, even though we've had two really great safeties in the last 5 or 6 years at Notre Dame. But I think he could be on par with how we talk about those guys.
I agree. I mean, I think Drew, I think he's already there personally. I mean, I think he's a great football player. Who is underestimated? Faison certainly is underestimated. I think across the board by there are fans that you know realize he's big time, but I think that whole former walk on stuff who gives a damn what their classification was at one point. I would like to think, and this goes back to the start of this podcast, that Micah Gilbert is in a position to be that guy. Based upon some of the things that Marcus Freeman said the other day, Christian Gray, I think Christian Gray was like, I'm not saying as a nickel because we don't really know, but I think Christian Gray was underrated as a corner. Did he get too many interference holding penalties? Yes, he did, but it's better than a 60-yard score. He made a ton of great plays on the football, but we have a tendency not to remember those. You know, look, when you're opposite Benjamin Morrison and Leonard Moore, they're going to throw to your side a lot, and receivers win matchups. DBs can't win, corners can't win them all the time. Christian Gray, I think, is probably the most underrated player going into the season.
I actually agree with Jim Booney, CRS, who listed these two guys for fans and media. One, I think we all forget, starts for Notre Dame. Jaden Osbury.
I just wrote him down, Tim. Absolutely.
Here's the other one I would have said, too.
But he somehow gets under the radar. I think if he just got older, if he was 18 playing like this, he'd be like, oh, my God, he's the greatest player ever. So Jaden Osbury, and then we didn't underrate him, Priester. I don't remember where Drew had him or Ben Tucker's Willer. And Pete doesn't underrate him, but Cooper Flanagan's underrated by Notre Dame's fans and what he's going to do for the football team. He's going to lead them in – well, Faison, well, I'm sorry. Faison and then Flanagan will lead them in snaps. A position player. And people say, what does that mean? It means they're the most trusted players out there. So he would be my guy. Stats, I'm not saying his stats are necessarily going to be great, but people forget about him. But Jaden Osbury, I feel like he could – we already mentioned every other linebacker on this thing. To bring up Jaden Osbury, he was the fourth one in that conversation. He's good. He's a really good.
If he weren't in the same class as Drake Bowen, like, he would just be the guy we pencil in there. Like, yeah. It just, he came in with that, him, and he edged him out in terms of playing time or a little earlier. But in terms of what he can do everything, too, now. I mean, maybe not pass rushing, but he's great in coverage. He has gotten more experience at middle linebacker. Like, he is a complete football player out there.
If we can believe Jaden Sneed's scouting report on Armel Mukum.
That was a glowing scouting report by Sneed.
My goodness, it was a really glowing scouting. I hope it's at least half true, because then you have a functional backup defensive tackle that can come in and be productive.
We have a little bit of practice to watch tomorrow, a lot of Shields Family Hall to walk through. Our practice reports we haven't figured this out yet or even talked about it. Our practice reports might be a little bit delayed tomorrow because we will be walking through Shields Family Hall when we're supposed to be writing mini practice reports. But we will also have Chris Ash and Mike Denbrock. We'll have Irish Illustrated Instant Analysis. And then we have a special Wednesday, August 26th treat for you. That is the next podcast instead of Thursday. In that podcast, Drew Mentok will talk about Tay Johnson's tackling ability, and Priester will talk about six defensive linemen coming in to Notre Dame and how they all be good. And I'll mention Happy Camp and how Mathias Farley and Zeke Mata had a unique relationship. So if you guys missed any of that this time, come back again Wednesday, August 26th for our next podcast, but a lot going on tomorrow before that. For Tim Priester and Drew Mentok, I'm Tim O'Malley. Thanks for watching and listening, Irish Illustrated Insider.